Probably true. Yud Beis Amid Beis, just 24. The Mishnah 2, 4, 6, 8 lines on the bottom of the page. Okay, this Gemara is very interesting, very easy also. The Mishnah says, we're learning basically what you're allowed to do Chol HaMoed, what you're not allowed to do Chol HaMoed, and so on. So Mishnah says, Machnas Odom Peresim Neaganovim. And Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to bring your fruits into the house in order that it shouldn't get stolen. Even though it's considered a bother and an effort to do things, an effort you're not allowed to do, but here's a loss of money. Because if you don't bring them in, they're going to get stolen. V'shayla Pishtonim in Amishra, you're allowed to lift up your flax from the redding. That's the process that they do with the flax. Why? That it shouldn't get spoiled. And again, all these things, basically, the Mishnah is saying you're allowed to do things on a Chol HaMoed that normally it's excessive effort, which is not allowed, but to save money, not to have a loss of money, you're allowed to.
You do what with the piston? Should the piston be
on? No, they used to pick it up. They used to have a redding, whichever the process was. They say from the, it used to be like...
Piles of piston, or...?
Not piles of piston. It was more of a... In order to separate the fibers of flax from the woody tissue, one soaks or rets it. If it's not removed from the retting in time, it becomes spoiled. So it's a soaking process. Mishnah normally thinks that they soak. So you're allowed to remove the flax, the linen, from the soaking, otherwise it's going to get lost, ruined. But, you shouldn't plan on scheduling it to do it Chol HaMoed. That means if whatever happened didn't happen before Chol HaMoed, on Chol HaMoed you can take the stuff in, you can take it out of the redding and so on. Then he says, what happens? In all these cases that we just mentioned, in Kivnum Lachtam B'Moed, if somebody intentionally to do it on Chol HaMoed, you have to make him get lost. And the Gemara is going to, it's interesting, the Rishonim, some, there's different opinions, what does it mean that they have to be lost? What does it mean? So, meaning the owner is forbidden, some Paskim write, the owner is forbidden to benefit from this work. Other Paskim learn, the Rambam learns the Mashul, that Bezdin makes it Hefker. Which is interesting. Bezdin punishes the guy that he has to lose the value of it because he made his work go on Chol HaMoed. Okay, then the Gemara continues and says like this. Tana, we learned that a Braisa, we learned that if your fruit is out in the fields and your fate is going to get stolen from the Ganovim, you're allowed to bring it into the house. So the Mishnah says, in Braisa it says, you have to do it privately. Because we don't want people, but people are going to see that you're schlepping things on Chol HaMoed. And that's excessive work. Here the Chachamim permitted you because you're going to lose money if you don't. But you have to do it in a private way that people shouldn't see it. So the Gemara says, Rav Yosef, Havala Kishuri, Rav Yosef had some heavy beams that he left outdoors. Aileinu b'yamama, he brought it in, obviously not himself, with other people, workers, during the day of Chol HaMoed. He didn't do it at night. We just learned the Braisa that says, when you want to do things to save, that it shouldn't get stolen or lost, you have to do it privately, quietly, at night, so to speak, when nobody's looking. Rav Yosef did it in broad daylight. So Amar le Abaye. So Abaye said to Rav Yosef, but Vahotani, we just learned in the Braisa, Ubevache Yachnisim Betzina Beteir Beisei. You have to do it quietly, discreetly. So why did you bring it during the day when everybody's looking what you're doing? Everybody can see what you're doing. Amar le, Rav Yosef said to him like this, Tzina Dahani Yomamahu. If anything, schlepping in heavy beams is more private during the day than it is at night. He says, why? Explains why. Kivan the Balaila, number one, if it's at night, boy, Gavri, you say you need more people to help you schlep. Because over that night, I mean, you can't see what you're doing, you just need more people to do it. Number two, Uvoi Meducha Deneira, and you need torches of fire. And if that's the case, Afshemilta creates a commotion. And as he says, beams, to carry beams in during the day is less of a commotion than carrying beams in at night. So Rav Yosef said, what do you want from me? I did it privately, by day, Dafka, because at night it's worse. So basically, the conclusion of the Gemara, though, is when you're allowed to do things to bring them in, so to speak, they shouldn't get ruined or stolen or whatever, you have to do it in a discreet fashion, whatever it is. Sometimes it's day, sometimes it's at night, but whatever it is, it should be done discreetly. Then it says, in the Mishra, it was another din. V'sheyle pishtanim in a Mishra, you're allowed to lift up the flax from where it was soaked. Like we learned, they used to soak flax in liquid, and then if it stays there too long, you're going to ruin it. So you're allowed to take it up, take it out on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, and then the Mishnah said, and if you did it on Chol HaMoed intentionally, that means you planned to do the work on Chol HaMoed, you lose it. Chum give you a fine, you can't use the stuff. So the Gemara asks an interesting shaila. Rabbi Yirmi asked the shaila from Rab Zeira. Kivim malachte b'meid u'meis. This is a very interesting shaila, and the Gemara is going to give a few examples of this question. A guy intended to do it on Chol HaMoed. So what's the halacha? We fine him that he can't use the stuff. Right? But what happens if he died? Do you give his son the same fine that the father would have gotten?
He died before he did the act or after he did
the act? No, he did the act. Well, of course, if not, he didn't do anything wrong. The father did the act of schlepping it, and he intended. We know for sure. Yet, you know, we have proof that he intended to do it on Chol HaMoed. And the father did it on Chol HaMoed, intentionally. So what's the halacha? We fine him that you can't use it anymore. Yeah? But now the father died. So now the question, the son inherits the father. Does the son get the same fine that the father? One second. So what's the question basically? Is it on the object or on the person? That's a simple question. Are we fining the object or are we fining the person?
Fining the person.
One second. So he says like this. What happens? Boy, minei Rabbi Yirmi Rabzei. Rabbi Yirmi asked Rabbi Zeir such a shayla. Kivim lachta b'meid omeis. If somebody intended to do the work on Chol HaMoed and died, mahu sheyikne silban of achrav. Do the chachamim forbid to find the son also or not? And then he says like this. Intim salem, if you want to say. And the Gemara gives another example. Sodom eizen b'cherd. In the case, if somebody made a blemish on a b'chor. Now the din is like this. A b'chor, a male firstborn animal, you have to give to the kohen. And what does the kohen have to do? He has to bring it as a korban, and then the kohen is allowed to eat the meat afterwards. Like we learned in the, we say in Ezel Mekim, a b'chor, v'amaisa, v'apesach, you have to be makriv it. Now, what happens if the animal has a blemish, which makes it not kosher for a korban? The kohen then is allowed to just shecht it as a regular animal and eat it.
Outside.
Yeah, it's not a korban anymore.
Rabbi, is it same as...
One second. But it's forbidden for a kohen to do it, to make a blemish in the animal. And the din is, if a kohen did it, we can ask the same question. Do you find the son or not? Okay, now.
But would he give the money to the Kohen? Is he allowed to keep it or he has to do something
It's Kohen's money.
For him?
He bought a baby. He sold the baby.
Any Kohen that you just need to have then, the money...
It's his money.
And he doesn't have to bring it to
the money is not holy.
Or same value. He doesn't have to bring the same value to do something misrovida or something.
Right. Now, if the kohen intentionally makes a blemish in the animal, he cannot use the animal. It's a knas.
But that's not the same shah. You can't connect these two shahs.
Why?
One is korban beit hamikdash, is totally different than something in the field.
Okay. Good. That's what the Gemara's going to say. But one second, let's get to where you jumped the gun. The question is, if the father did something wrong, and then the father died, the question is, do you punish the son? Do you find the son, so to speak? So he continues. He says, even if you want to say that we find a similar case by the blemish in the mum, okay? whether you find the kid or not, he said that case is different than our case. You can't even compare that case to our case. Why? He said, if you want to liken this to the case of Tzodom Ezen Bechod, if a guy nicked or cut the ear of a firstborn animal, which makes it a blemish, and over there the Gemara says, Kamsu B'nei Achrav, they find the son. He said, over here it's still different. Why? Mishum D'Yisuda D'Raisa. Because when the father blemished the animal, that's a biblical prohibition. What did the Torah say? The Torah says, it's forbidden to make a blemish in an animal of Hekdesh. So maybe over there, the Gemara says, the din is you find the son. Just like the father couldn't use the animal, the father died, the son cannot use the animal.
But the father cannot use.
One second. So he said, let's say the same din should be here. The father worked Chol HaMoed, he can't use the grain, neither can the son. But the Gemara says over there is different. Because over there, the guy did a biblical sin. So biblical sin is much worse. But halacha, but over here, I mean, over there, he did a melacha d'oraisa. Then he says like this. V'imtim Suleiman, if you want to say another case. Machar avde la'evit k'chavim no'meis. There's a din. If somebody sold his goyish slave to an idol worshipper, meaning to a goy, the din is, you make the Jew buy back his slave from the goy. So one opinion says 100 times the value, what he paid, and one opinion says 10 times the value. Uh-huh. Meaning like this, when a goyish slave is bought by a Jew, you give him a bris, take him to the mikveh, he's obligated in mitzvahs like a woman. Meaning, all negative mitzvahs, any mitzvah not connected to time, the goyish slave has to keep. So the din is, you're not allowed to sell a goyish slave to a goyish owner. Why? Because now he's not going to be able to do mitzvahs. Until now, he was obligated to do mitzvahs, and he was by a Jew, he was able to keep Shabbos, he was able to keep Pesach, he was able to keep, you know, all the mitzvahs you have to keep, like a woman. But what happens if you sell them to a guy? So Chum said, we're going to fine you that you have to buy him back. Not only for the price you sold him for, 10 times, or another opinion says 100 times, the value of what you sold him, you have to buy it back.
He doesn't have the money 100 times?
He has to borrow money.
If you sold for 1,000, he has to pay $100,000 to buy him back?
Yep.
If the owner doesn't want to sell it, he should raise it up to that amount.
Yeah, no. That means if the guy refuses to sell it, how much you have to bargain to get it back? Up to 10 times or 100 times. Now, what happens if the guy sold his slave to the guy, which he wasn't allowed to, and then he died? The question, do we force the kid to do it too? So he says, even though the din is, you do force the kid. But he says, over there is different. Mishum dechol yema mafkali mimitzis. You know why over there is so strict? Because every day the guy can't do mitzvahs. Every day the guy can't do mitzvahs. Over here, what did the guy do? Over here, the guy worked on Chol HaMoed. It's a big deal.
Put him on animal.
Yeah, but it's not as strict. No, over there is their ice. In other words, like this. There's three cases. There's our case, a guy working Chol HaMoed, where Shiloh was asked, do you find the kid also, if the father dies? So Gemara says like this, you can't liken it to the other two cases we have in Gemara. One case is by a mum in Hegdish, where the Gemara says you find the kid. Over there, of course you find the kid, because it's also min Ateira. He did a biblical Aveda. We find my case by an Eved, also that if the father sold the Eved, you find the son. But over there is also worse than Chol HaMoed, because every day the guy's doing another Aveda. You're not letting the Eved do mitzvahs every day. But over here, Hachamai, here the Shaila is like this. Gavra konis le'irabanan, do the Chachamim penalize the person, v'holes, and that person is not alive anymore, he died. Or Dilma mamayna konis rabanan, Or do we say that the Chacham penalized the money? Va'is, and the money is here. In other words, because the Shiloh over here is like this. It's trade for guilt. It's trade for guilt because the guy did something with his money, but he pulled it up from the water, the flax, or he brought in the stuff because of the Gandavim or whatever. In all these cases, the guy did a sin with money. So now the shaila is the money treif? Is the money treif or not? Or do we say, no, the Chacham didn't find the money. The Chacham find the person. The person that did the crime is fine. The guy died. He's not here. The son never committed a sin. Why should he suffer? So this is the Gemara's question of what Rabbi Yirmiyah asked Rabbi Zeira. But along the way, they just brought in two interesting cases where you do find the son, but over there you can't prove from those two cases, that over here you'd also find the son. Because over there, number one, the first case is a biblical aveda by the blemish in Hegdash. Secondly, the case of the Eved, every day you're not letting him do mitzvahs. So over there, maybe the Chacham and find the son that he has to buy him back. That he should get back to Yiddishkeit. But over here, the Shaila is, here's a different question. Did the Chacham find the person or did the Chacham find the money?
In a case of cooking on Shabbos by Goy, you're not allowed to eat it for 2 hours. That's an Isur on the food.
Who did the Chacham find?
The food is not allowed to be eaten.
And what happens if the guy died? Can his son do it?
Can his son do what?
Can his son eat the food?
He's on the food.
No.
No?
No. If a guy, I'll give you an example. That thing that you're saying. If a guy a Jew cooks on Shabbos. Bemaze it, intentionally, you know, whatever. The din is, on Shabbos, nobody can eat the food. After Shabbos, everybody can eat the food but the guy that cooked.
For how long?
Maybe this pot.
Forever.
Is not kosher anymore?
And the pot becomes treif for him. He has to kosher the pot. But everybody else, the second Shabbos is over, can eat the meat right away. If a guy cooks, it's even worse. Then, if it took 2 hours to cook, after Shabbos, he can't eat it for 2 hours.
Why is that?
Because people are more lenient by goyim, so the chum were stricter.
Is it better not to eat the food, even if you made it after Shabbos?
After Shabbos, you're allowed to eat it.
It's better not to eat it.
No. Now, the question is, the guy's son, he can eat it after Shabbos. He wasn't fined. It's a knas on the person.
On the goy, in the case of goy cooking?
Then nobody can eat it until the amount of time after Shabbos it takes to cook it. No, it's the people can't eat. There's an interesting, famous machlekes in the Rishonim. It's a very interesting machlekes that encompasses all the scopes of forbidden things in the Torah. When the Torah says you can't eat chazer, does it mean that the person can't eat chazer, or chazer is treif? In Hebrew it's called, is it gavra? Is it on the person? Or is the object treif? In other words, and there's a lot of halachic differences, I don't want to go into it now, but does the Torah say chazer is treif? Or does the Torah say you as a person can't eat that? Then it goes even further. By something rabbinically forbidden. Many poskim write that even though the halacha is, by biblical, the Torah forbids the object, not the person. The object is treif. Many poskim write, by rabbinic things, rabbinic prohibitions, it's not the object. They say the chacham don't have a koyach, don't have the power to make an object treif. They control people. They can say, you are not allowed to eat it. But the object is not treif. And now I'll give you an example. Chicken and milk is rabbinically forbidden. Yeah? Does that mean that chicken and milk become treif? Or the Chacham say, you cannot eat chicken and milk. So there are many poskim that say that even though by biblical, by chazit, which is biblically forbidden, it's the object, not the person, by rabbinic, it's also only the person. Then there's another interesting shaila. You're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. What does that mean? Food is forbidden, or you can't eat food? So many poskim say, over there it's for sure the person. Erev Yom Kippur, the food's kosher. After Yom Kippur, the food's kosher. And Yom Kippur, the food becomes treif.
And if a person is sick, he can eat it.
He can eat it. Torah says you can eat it. But I'm saying, the Torah says you can't eat it. Erev Yom Kippur, this chicken was kosher. Yeah? The second Yom Kippur is over, the chicken is kosher. All of a sudden, it becomes treif. So they say, no. The halach is not necessarily like that. What it means is that the person can't eat it. Chametz and Pesach. Erev Pesach is kosher. The second Pesach is over, it's kosher. All of a sudden, 8 days is not kosher. What do you mean? It changed. The food changed. The food didn't change. The Chachamim say the person, or even then the Torah says the person can't eat it. So you have a lot of times in Torah, the concept, are we dealing with the people, or are we dealing with the object? And Rabbi Yirmiyah Shaila over here is, when a guy does work on Chol HaMoed that he's not allowed to, and therefore we find him, so are we finding the goods, or we're finding the person? What's the basic difference? Very simple. If we're finding the goods, then even if the kid owns them, it's still forbidden goods. But if we're finding the person, then this is not the person that's in, so then it's kosher. Then he could benefit from it.
In the case of Chazer, in the Chumash, it specifically mentions that it's an abomination, so is that an animal?
It's an abomination for a person to eat it. That's the shaila. I mean, is it the person can't eat it, or the Chazer is treif? What's called in yeshivish language, is it iser gavro, is it on the person, or is it on the object?
Or chavtza.
Or the chavtza, yes. Gavro or chavtza. And that's his question over here, basically. So Amalei, so this was a shayla that Rabbi Yirmi asked Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira answered him as follows. Tanisul, we learned it clearly. Your shayla is a clear braisa. Or in the Mishnah, really. It says in the Mishnah like this. Sadash in Iskapsa Bishvias, a field that was cleared of thorns during the Shemitah year, which really you're not allowed to clean the thorns because it looks like working. Nevertheless, Tizra Lemetzoy Shvias. You could sow it right after Shemitah. Okay? Now, but because the thorns were already detached from the ground, speaking of a case where the thorns were already detached from the ground, you're just cleaning them up. So that's only rabbinically forbidden. So the Chacham said, because it's rabbinically forbidden, what you did, you're doing the, after Shemitah, you can work the field. What happens, Netaiva, Nedaida, what happens if during the Shemitah year, he fertilized the field, and there's two different ways. Remember we learned before in the Gemara, you pen animals, if you want to fertilize the field, but then before they would put animals in a place, make a fence around it, they would do their thing and fertilize the field, and then you moved on to the next one. Or, they did a heavy-duty fertilization in the field, like Yisrael, Metzoy Shvius, you cannot plant it, Metzoy Shvius. Why? Because the Chacham will find you. In other words, when you do a rabbinic thing, the Chacham didn't find you. When you did a biblical thing like fertilization, so then the Chacham will find you. But the Amr no, fertilization is biblical. Cleaning up the thorns which are already cut off from the field is only rabbinic.
It says here, such fertilization is prohibited by rabbinical law. It doesn't say anything about biblical law.
1 second.
It says for such fertilization is prohibited by rabbinical law.
1 second.
I got it wrong, I don't know.
No, you're right, 1 second. No, here he's saying that, you're right. Here he's saying that the rabbinic one is stricter. because you go against the Chachamim, they say don't stand up with us. We're going to make it stricter that people should be more careful with the rabbinic laws. You're right, the heavy fertilization is rabbinic. But Amar Rabbi Yosi Rab Chanina, Rabbi Yosi Rab Chanina said, Naktinan, though we paskin, hey Tiva, what happens if a guy fertilized the field, umeis, and he died, but no zara, the child could fertilize, could plant the field next year.
Could.
So what do you see from here? That they only find the guy that did it, not his son. Because the din is, if the guy fertilized the field himself, he cannot plant the field even after Shemitah. They find him. But if he died, then the kid could do it, the son could do it.
Well, how long is that, right?
Huh?
How long do they put that together on
him? The whole following year.
The whole following year?
Yep. That whole year he cannot do it.
It says, no Zor'a. So,
yeah.
So he could...
The son, though, could do it after the Shemitah year. During Shemitah year, nobody's allowed to do it.
Right.
But you see clearly here that the Chacham find the father, not the son.
What would be the penalty if for the father? The father would be prevented from...
planting the field for the whole next year after Shemitah. And Bezdin, by the way, would make sure... What Bezdin would do, they would send Shluchim. And if a guy planted a field when he wasn't allowed to, they uprooted the whole field.
And wouldn't this guy know that? You have to figure. They say, if Bezdin says no, they're going to send someone to check on him.
Right.
You would figure they... This
they
guy
did,
know.
No. So they did.
But the guy would know, they would send someone to check on him.
Right, so I'm just saying, though, if the guy did it and he wasn't allowed to, Bezdin would mess it up anyway. You know, a lot of people think they can get away from the law. You know. So what do we see from here? The Gemara says, Alma, Ledidei, Kansel Rabban. That for him, the Chacham made a Knas. Levrei, Lei, Kansel Rabbanan. But to him, the Chacham didn't find the son. So Hachanami, concerning Chol HaMoed, is the same thing. That if the father scheduled the work during Chol HaMoed, and therefore the din is, we find him that he can't use the stuff. But nevertheless, if he died, the Didei Kansel Rabbanon, the Chacham only gave him the penalty. Levrei Le Kansel Rabbanon, for the son, they didn't establish a penalty. And therefore, the din is, as Rab Zeira answered Rab Yirmiyah's question, that if the father is fine, the son is not. But it's interesting. By the case of Bukhar, they're fined. And by the case of the slave, they're fined. Not only the father, but the son. But over there, as the Gemara explained, over there is different. Number one is biblical, so it's stricter. Secondly, every day that you don't buy the slave back from the guy, you're taking away his opportunity to do mitzvahs. So over there, you fine even the son.
You could say that in the case where the guy planned that the Chol HaMoed is going to work and take the stuff out of the water, and then so he owes a certain amount of money to Beis Din?
No, Beis Din said you just can't benefit from this linen, flax, that's it. They take it, they'll throw it out. So that's, by the way, like we said before, not everybody agrees that that's the definition of that halacha. Some people say, like we said before, some poskim hold he cannot benefit from the work. But here, the Rambam learns that Beis Din confiscates the product of this illicit work. Or some poskim learn what the Gemara says, Yoivad. That means you can't work on a Chol HaMoed anyway. I is going to get lost. Tough luck. The Rambam learns Yoivad means Beis Din taki gets rid of it. You lose the money.
So let's say, so you're supposed to lose the money. The Beis Din is supposed to take and confiscate the stuff.
Right.
And the father dies.
The son can use it.
Because somehow there is a liability of this father.
Because it's only on the father, not on the son. Who did the crime? The father did the crime.
And it's not that this liability, tax liability or whatever, goes together to the inheritor.
No. No, that's in by the IRS. No,
I understand. I'm just trying to think.
Because over there, it's on the money, not on the person. The money is taxed, not the person. So over there, God forbid, when the father dies, it's on the estate. It's not on the father.
Not here.
Not here. Not in this case.
Yeah.
By the Bchoria,
yeah.
By the Evidya, but not by the case of Cholam Moed, and not the case of, like you said, the Shemitah. That's one thing. Then Amar Abaya, Abaya is a different concept. Naktina, and this is also very interesting, Halacha. Timei Tehereisav, if somebody contaminated, they made Tomei, the things which were not Tomei. Okay, and he died, the consul B'nai Achrov, they didn't find the son from the father's estate. Meaning like this, when somebody, if I come, there's a rule in Halacha that's called Hezek She'ena Nikar. I ruin your stuff, I damage your stuff, but it's not a noticeable damage. It's not noticeable damage. For instance, you have things that are not Tomei, and now I make it Tomei. I come and make your stuff Tomei. So I can come along to you and say, hey, what did I do? Look at your stuff, they're perfect. Okay? So the din is, it's a whole machlekes in the Gemara, is that called a damage or not? But the Gemara says, we still find the guy, we penalize the guy that he has to pay for it. He didn't cause any damage. Chum said, you know what we don't want? If whoever has enemies, a guy's going to go around making all the stuff tummy. We don't want that. So what's the din if the guy made somebody else's stuff tummy and he died? Does the son have to pay for it or not? So then he doesn't have to pay. He doesn't have to pay. What? No, you know that he took a bug, a shaddit, and he touched it. You see, the witnesses. But he says, I didn't damage your stuff. What did I do? So the Gemara says, over there, Leikonsu b'nei Achrav, the Chacham did not penalize the son. Why not? He says, my time. He says, Hezek she'ein a nikud, from biblical standpoint, a non-noticeable damage is not called a damage. Okay? But, Lididu, therefore the Chacham only find Konsul Rabbanan. The Chacham find the guy himself. But, Librei, Le Konsul Rabbanan, but not to the son. In other words, because he didn't, as Rashi explains it, he didn't damage the food, he damaged the value of the food, because Tomei is cheaper than Tahar food. Right? Because Tomei is, you're limited to how you can eat or what you can eat it. So Tamidika food is cheaper than Tahadika food. But I didn't damage your food. So he said, biblically, it's not called a Hezek. But the Chachamim were smart. They came along and said, you know, if you do it, we're going to make you pay for it. Because we don't want you going around, make everybody say, you're a crazy guy. You're going to make everybody think Tamay and get away with it. So the Chachamim say, though, we're not going to find the kid. He didn't do anything wrong.
Kind of a limited conception of damage if you say that the only damage that we're going to recognize is that which is visible, because in fact it is damage. I mean, it's what we would call damage if somebody has made food tummy.
Why is it damaged?
Because
it's edible.
It's less valuable.
Do you see looking at the food that it's less valuable?
It's not, but see. Like I said, it's a limited conception to say that damage is only consists in what one can see.
Why?
Because we all know that the food is less valuable. It's less, it's worth less.
In legal terms, it's damage. It's a spiritual damage.
It is damage. It is less.
I don't know if the legal law is damaged.
Yeah, it is. We all know that it's worth less. We all know that it's worth
in biblical law, it's takanata damage, the Gemara says.
Because it's not visible, you see.
Right.
Okay, but again, so why should only visible damage be considered damage?
Because damage, by definition, simply is when I change something that you have in a visible way that I ruined it.
Okay, in a visible way. But you have changed something.
Correct. That's why the Chachamim gave you a fine.
Right. So I think they, there should be a penalty.
Yeah, but it's only rabbinic, not biblical. But then who gets the fine? Only the guy that did it. The son doesn't get the fine. So the same day, guy works in Chol HaMoed. Abai is answering also. Guy works Chol HaMoed. Bottom line of it is, only the father gets, and not the... Let me ask you a question. If I... This is also a very interesting shaila in the Gemara in Baba Basra. Your field is growing beautifully, yeah? And I give you an ayin hara. I give the field an ayin hara. Yeah? And the crops die. Do I have to pay?
Can't prove that.
What if you bless it and it multiplies?
Nothing. You get a mitzvah.
You can't prove that.
You could prove it. A guy says, I'll give you an, a guy admits, I gave you an hara. A guy says, I gave the field an ayin hara.
Well, let's say, would everybody...
Is that a damage or not?
Let me ask you a question. Would everybody agree that what happened in the field is a result of what this other guy did? If it's the ayin hara that was the immediate cause of the destruction of the field, if everybody agrees that that were the case, then I would say yes.
What did I do?
We're all agreeing that you had some power to induce a physical change in the field because of something that you said. Something that you said made a change in the field.
If a guy curses somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah? Forget I know. A guy curses somebody and the curse comes true. He has to pay.
What I said was that if we all agreed that the
you're asking a question, I'm asking back.
What?
You're asking me a question, I'm asking you back.
What is your most recent question is what?
If I
curse
that, if somebody curses somebody, and the curse becomes a guy curses, your house should burn down. Okay, a guy can say your house should burn down, and the house burns down. Does he have to pay?
Is there any koach?
I'm asking you.
That's the question. Is there any koach to a curse like that?
Balak wanted Bilam to curse the Jews. There is a koach.
Okay, so.
But.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean Beznik can obligate you financially.
Well, why are you?
Let me give you a different example. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, the sixth parak, beginning of the sixth parak. You have an animal in a barn. Yeah. In the middle of the night, I go and unlock the barn door and open it. And the animal runs out and gets killed. Do I have to pay?
Yes.
You know, using what I know of our own legal system, yes. I would say yes. I mean,
okay, and the Gemara says, the Gemara enumerates like 10 such similar cases. The Gemara says, Potter medine adam, v'chayev medine shemayim. Meaning, the courts cannot obligate you to pay. Medine adam, in the court system, the courts can, you're potter. But medine shemayim, if you want to fulfill the obligation to God, so to speak, mm-hmm. you have to pay. But Bezin can't obligate you to pay. You know why? Because you did say, I killed your animal. I opened the barn door. What does that have to do with your animal? It's indirect. Indirect is not obligated.
But for your act, my animal would still be alive.
Doesn't matter. You know, the Gemara says the same thing. I'll give you even a worse example than this. The Gemara says, I come with a plate of poison. I don't feed your animal. If I feed your animal poison, that's directly a mazik, right? I don't feed your animal. I put down a plate of poison in front of your animal. And your animal eats the poison and dies. What did I do? Did I kill your animal?
Yes.
No. I told your animal to eat? Did I feed your animal?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I did not. I did not feed your animal.
You did.
I didn't. I put down a plate of poison.
It is because it's a virtual certainty that if you put the poison food in front of the animal not knowing that it contains poison will be attracted to the food and will eat it. Everybody knows that.
The Gemara says, and they sama mavis the same bamus chavere. If you put poison in front of you, you don't feed them. If you feed them, that's direct. Okay? Pater medini adam, v'chai medini shamayim.
It seems to me that you are in fact feeding the animal when you place the food
in the... I'll give you another example. What's going on now? There's a big tumult in Muncie. I don't know how many people are in the Frum community. It's a big tumult now. They found a butcher, a Frum glad kosher butcher, fed half a Muncie with trefa chickens. Half of the holy city of Muncie was eating trefa chickens.
How long?
I don't know, a few months. I don't know all the details. I just heard about it. Now, because of that...
Did he do it intentionally or
anything? He knew.
He knew?
He knew it was treif. He's a firm guy. He knew it was treif.
Oh, boy.
Yeah? Well, he had a scandal here once. Don't you remember?
A long time ago.
Okay.
Fairfax, right?
Yeah?
No, on Pico.
It's a Pico and Fairfax. They're both right. Now, because of that... let's say... I'm speaking now hypothetically. Or theoretically, whatever. Because of that... people have to kosher the kitchens, right?
Oh,
yeah? People have to kosher the kitchens if they're treif, yeah? What happens? Those pots you can't kosher. It's not kosherable material. You have to throw them out. I'm going to have a loss. Yeah? Does that guy have to pay everybody's losses?
I would say justice would dictate that you should be honest.
I'm not... justice died a long time ago. I'm talking about Can Bezdin make you pay? You know, we just had in Southern California now, yeah? There's a whole issue that the judge ruled, there was a ruling two days ago, that during the blackout, recently during the heat wave, so people didn't have electricity for days, okay, and a lot of stuff spoiled in the freezers.
Random turn off light.
No, there was a mamish for days. And then the Southern California Edison said that people give in their claims, right? And people were giving in claims for the meat or whatever they lost in the when the freezers weren't working. They just ruled 2 days ago that that the Edison is not paying, and they said we only have to pay if it was negligent. If we were negligent, we were not negligent. And therefore, we're not paying a cent. I think cause damage. It's indirect.
Well, in this case, what they're saying is there's without fault, without
not negligent. No, without negligence.
Right. That means to say they didn't intend to do it, and they weren't negligent.
That they, in other words, not the pshat they did. They knew about it and didn't fix it. They were working on it right away, and you know,
it was no fault of theirs.
Right.
So therefore, they...
but if it's an indirect fault, it's not. The Gemara says clearly: if I open a barn door in front of somebody, bedinei shemai, meaning if you want to look at morals, morally you should pay. Beis Din cannot obligate you to pay. It's indirect damage.
And if tomorrow you open your barn or someone else's barn or...
No. I open your barn. If I open my barn, that's my problem. I open your barn. I don't shoo out your animal. I don't schlep out your animal. I don't do nothing. Mm-hmm. I open your barn door and go home.
And my
your animal, your cow goes out and gets killed.
First, you have to prove you opened the barn door.
There's witnesses that I opened. No, there are witnesses that I opened the barn door. I admit they opened the barn door.
We don't believe you.
No, that's not by monetary. No. By monetary, if I say I owe you money, I owe you money. By monetary things, if I say I owe you $1,000 and two witnesses say I don't, I still have to pay. I'm not believed to say I desecrated Shabbos, I did an Aved, I did something wrong. That you're not believed. But when it comes to monetary, you can obligate yourself monetarily. Anyway, so the Gemara's conclusion is that certain times you find the kid, certain times you don't find the kid. A guy works Chol HaMoed, you don't find the kid. Okay, you don't penalize the kid. Then the Gemara says a new Mishnah. Ein leichin batim avodim ubehema. You're not allowed to purchase houses, slaves, or animals on Chol HaMoed. Elo letzeirach HaMoed, only if you need it for Yom Tov. Meaning, a guy has nowhere to live. and he needs a place to live on Yom Tov. You can buy a house. You need behemoth to eat, you know, to shecht and to eat for Yom Tov. You're allowed to do it. But that's it. Or avadim, you need servants to help you serve during the meal. But or letzerach hamecher she'en lemayechel. Or another case, you're allowed to buy houses or servants or animals if the seller has nothing to eat. And he pushes selling it because he needs to make a living, to live. And the Gemara is going to discuss how far this goes. So the din is, then you're also allowed to buy it. Even if you don't need it for Yom Tov. Because you're giving this guy the opportunity to be able to make a living because he has nothing to eat. So now the Gemara says, Bar mine rov mir rav Nachman. So nov as a shalaf from rav Nachman. Schar pa'ula she'en l'mayeichel. Can you pay wages for work if the guy has nothing to eat? Mahu, what's the din? Now, it says, Mahu, what's the din? Do we allow him? In other words, are you allowed to hire a worker on Chol HaMoed that you don't need the work for Yom Tov, but this guy has nothing to eat? And you want to hire him to be able to pay him that he should have what to eat. Are you allowed to do it? Because the Mishnah basically says you can only do things that are needed for Yom Tov. This is not needed for Yom Tov. So are you allowed to do it or not? So he said, Tanina, we learned it. That what? It said in our Mishnah, you're allowed to buy things from the seller that has nothing to eat. So what does it mean? What does this phrase, who has nothing to eat, come to include? It's lav lasuy schar pulat. And mistami, you can pay wages for work on Chol HaMoed for the person who's working to be able to have what to eat. Isn't that what the Mishnah is including? So my son, Amalei, no. Perusha kamafarish, it's only explaining the earlier case. Meaning, when are you allowed to buy things from a seller? On Yom Tov, if the seller has nothing to eat, then you're allowed to. But how do you know that to hire a worker, to pay a worker things which are needed, not needed for Yom Tov, how do you know you're allowed to do it? Okay, so now it says, Eisei Abaya. So Abaya asked the question. And Rav is answering. So he says, in case in Shtar Echei V'Meid, you're not allowed to write loan documents on Chol HaMoed. What happens though, Im Einem Aminei? What happens if you don't trust the borrower? In other words, the Mishnah is saying like this. If the lender and the borrower both trust each other, and you're just planning to write a loan document for who knows when, you're not allowed to do it Chol HaMoed. What happens if you don't trust the guy? So right away he'll deny it. Or, she'en lei mayeichal, the lender has nothing to eat, meaning if you don't do the loan, the borrower needs the money for Yom Tov, and if you don't do the loan, the borrower won't have what to eat. Then the din is, areze yichtev, you're allowed to write it. So again, he says, she'en la mayeichal asuye mai. What does it include? Lav lasuye schar pu'ula. Does it not come to include wages for work on Chol HaMoed? What is the Braisa say, or the Mishnah saying? A guy that has nothing to eat, you're allowed to write for him, you can do things for him. So what do we see from here? That you can hire a worker who has nothing to eat. That you should be able to give. And the Braisa Shmamino is a good proof. Murtaka says it's a good proof. So you could learn this from the Mishnah, that you're allowed to hire a worker to work for you on Chol HaMoed if he has nothing to eat and he pushes needs the money, even though what you're hiring him to do is not for the need for Yom Tov. It's not for the need of Yom Tov. If it's the need of Yom Tov, you're anyway allowed to do it. Here, if it's not the need of Yom Tov, you could do it if the guy needs. And that's, by the way, that's the halacha. Even though Mar's going to ask a question on it, but the halacha is that you're allowed to hire a worker if the guy has nothing to eat.
There's no issue that someone will see him working in your backyard or front.
No, because this outweighs that.
Otherwise, then if you have people working, you should let them off for
the
whole week.
Huh?
You have people working, obviously, you have to let them.
Yeah, but by the way, he brings down the Magen Avraham, by the way, that writes that when a worker hired for non-festival need because of lack of food, must do the work in private. No, because of Marisayan, you're right. Marisayan, the guy will think you could do such work on Chol HaMoed. Because it's not essential for Yom Tov. He stopped doing who knows what. So people are going to think you're allowed to do it. So the din is you have to do it in private.
But if it's what he said, you have to close and lay people off, but you're going to lose money. In that case, you're allowed to open.
But you're talking about two different issues of the same picture. Yeah, in the whole picture, if you're going to have to pay workers and you're going to lose money, then they could be open, Chol-Meid.
Open, but closed in a way.
Right. It should be private.
Not.
Right. Because even though the Chachamim. See, in other words, like this. If it's stuff that's needed for Yom Tov, you could even do it publicly. Because everybody knows this is you need for the Yom Tov. If it's not for the need of Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do it. What happens, the guy has no food to eat, then even though it's not for Yom Tov, you could do it, but you got to do it privately. Because otherwise, people think that you're just allowed to do this in Yom Tov. See, he says like this, it's interesting, he brings down at the bottom like this. What is the definition, she'en le'ma li'echel? We're speaking about the seller. You're allowed to buy something from a seller if he has nothing to eat. And then it says the worker has nothing to eat, you can give him work to do. So some poskim write like this. By the seller, it doesn't literally mean he doesn't have what to eat. He has what to eat. But he needs to make Yom Tov nicer. When the din is of a worker, that you can hire a worker to do non-Yom Tov things on Chol HaMoed, if he has nothing to eat, he means taki, he has nothing to eat. But if the guy that has what to eat, but he can't just beautify the Yom Tov, he's taki not allowed to. Because selling is not work like working. So by selling, you're more lenient. Stam to sell Chol HaMoed, you should. But if a guy needs to better the Yom Tov, means he wants to make the Yom Tov better, he can sell. Because selling is not really work. But when I hire a worker to work for you, then he must have nothing to eat, and then he can work for you. But by the way, you just see from all these missions so far, that this whole concept of going shopping, Chol HaMoed, and all these things are not halachically correct. I mean, you see from all these gemaras, the guy has nothing to eat, you can sell, and you know, but it's time to go shopping, Chol HaMoed, because everybody's off from school, you know, is not, you see clearly from these mishnas, it's not something that should be done.
So in other words, you can't go on like Magic Mountain, those places?
No, that's enjoyment of Yom Tov. That's Seder HaMoed.
So you can't go shop for food?
No, shopping for food, yeah. But I'm saying, can you go shopping? Furniture, can you go, For things you don't need on Chol HaMoed or Yom Tov. If you want to buy a dress or a suit for Chol HaMoed, I mean for Yom Tov, then you're allowed to. But it's time to buy clothing for that you're not going to wear Yom Tov. You're going to wear whatever. You're not allowed to. Or buying furniture. All these business things are Chacham forbid on Chol HaMoed. In fact, there's a big shailish, you know. You know, a lot of families get together on Yom Tov. You know, Pesach, Sukkot, families get together. Can you take a family picture on Chol HaMoed?
With a professional guy, you mean?
Yeah, well, even by the way, it's not so simple. A guy, but it was done by the Rebbe, but one time a bocher took a picture from the Rebbe on Chol HaMoed, and the Rebbe turned to him and said, did you ask it off if you'll take pictures on Chol HaMoed? But there was another guy, he used to talk in front of the Rebbe's face, a snapping picture, but that was his job. That was his profession.
Maybe if that's his profession, he's not supposed to.
Of course, because there are all those beautiful pictures of the Rebbe with.
Yeah.
That's for business. He would lose money if he doesn't take it.
Right.
No, well, some other guy did it.
It was present.
For the heck of it, just took a picture of the Rebbe.
Yeah.
Chol HaMoed, he couldn't do that.
Right. No, he was. He was an Israeli guy. Israeli.
Regarding hiring a guy to do work for in Chol HaMoed,
we learned before you can hire a guy in Chol HaMoed to do work after Chol HaMoed. That we learned before.
Right. But you hire him now because that does not have what he does not have what to eat.
Then you can hire him Chol HaMoed.
Is there a shiur as to how much? I mean, meaning $50, $100, $2,000.
You mean can you only pay him for the food that he actually needs? I don't think so.
You hire him because they don't have money for yontif.
You know, the din is a guy. The Gemara says who's eligible to tzedakah. Guy is $199. If a guy is $199, if he has $200, he can't take tzedakah. I mean, talking about like it pay, you know, that's not. Now the Gemara says if a guy is $199, how much tzedakah can he take? He could take $1 million tzedakah. We don't say once you get the next dollar, so now you have $200, you can't take tzedakah anymore. Once you're eligible for tzedakah, you could take. Or like we learned by Muktzah. If I'm allowed to take this off the table, I don't have to drop it the second it goes off the table. Once it's in my hand already, I can put it back where I want.
Oh, is this what they were talking about? Boy or
a yid?
This is a yid. Why are you having, he's going to have given food. Just give him food. Why do you have to?
But he's working for you. How are you going to give him food? No, people don't want him. What happens? The guy doesn't want to take. The guy doesn't want to take tzedakah. He doesn't want to. The guy, you pay. You know, I work. I'll take. But I'm not going to. A lot of people like that. They won't take tzedakah, but they'll work and they'll whatever you pay them is good.
And you could still give it $300, and you come after yontif to do trimming of the trees from you, whatever.
Yeah, and the Jew, and he doesn't come back.
I mean, if he's honest, he
you never give a Jew money and that loan document.
That many people don't want to just get money; they want to do some work for
but
you.
But they don't feel they do the work after the work. They feel they get paid. Before the work, they don't want to get paid. So not okay.